We are back on another edition of the Bengals Beat Podcast at the Enquirer Studio. I'm joined by a whole load of talent right now. We have Tyler Dragon, the Cincinnati Enquirer Bengals beat writer, John Fay over here. He's going to be helping out throughout the season, the road and home games. And our man, Kareem, behind the wheels, Kareem El-Ghazar. He's going to be back there producing and chiming in also. And I want to go ahead and get to it, guys. On Sunday, Zach Taylor pretty much just spilled the beans. I can really appreciate that. No offense to the Marvin Lewis years, but how honest he was, the information he started to give out. Tyler, were you surprised with some of the news?
Yeah, when I was listening to him, I'm so lucky to have two phones because I had one phone recording everything he said, and then I had another phone in my hand. And then he just started going bombshell after bombshell after bombshell. And I was tweeting frantically, okay, Damian Willis, he's starting. Michael Jordan, he's starting. Trey Hopkins, he's starting. So it was an interesting and eventful Sunday. But that is good. As I mentioned on Cincinnati.com, he kind of laid down the law and just showed what things are going to be like this year for the Cincinnati Bengals, you know. It seems simple and seems self-explanatory, but the best players are going to play. There's no politics. Doesn't matter if you're an undrafted free agent. Doesn't matter if you're a rookie. Everybody came with a fresh slate, and the coaching staff evaluated each and every player from square one. And the best players that performed well during OTAs, during mini camp, during training camp, and then the first few preseason games are the ones that are going to be in the field. And that's how it should be.
John, you've been in this business covering Major League Baseball and also the NFL. Were you at least a little surprised with him just spilling the news and the information for the starters?
Yeah, I think I can't remember who asked the question. Has the offensive line been resolved? And everybody just expected, no, we're still looking at it. We got to look at it. Boom, he laid it out there. And not only did he tell us what is going to happen and what the depth chart was, I think the moves were surprising. You know, that Billy Price, the number one draft choice, basically lost his job to Trey Hopkins. Michael Jordan, a rookie, is starting at left guard. And Damian Willis, an undrafted free agent from Troy State, is going to be the starting wide receiver. It was like Tyler said, it's refreshing that they did it on merit and not in the past. Marvin Lewis was notorious for making rookies not earn it, but he'd make them go through a process as a rookie, so it was hard for them to get on the field except in rare cases. And this guy's shown, I mean, it's a whole new slate, and I think it's just a new way of doing things. And the other thing that says to the veterans, well, I got to play. You know, I got to play well to keep my job.
Kareem, I'm going to go to you right now. You were there last season on the sideline. You got to watch Trey Hopkins fill in for Billy Price. He was at center for six games while Billy was down. Your guy getting the start at center. Are you surprised with that?
I've been saying it all along. I didn't necessarily say that he was going to get the start at center, but I've been impressed with Trey Hopkins from last year, and I just, you know, as we talked about going through this offseason, not to sleep on Trey Hopkins, and he won the starting center job. It's easy for me to say that it doesn't surprise me, because that's what I said all season long. But the other thing about Zach Taylor actually giving out information is that I'm just so used to sitting in the back of the room rolling on video and expecting however many dozen so forths from Marvin Lewis. And so I wasn't there on Sunday, but when I saw the news that so-and-so is starting, and so I'm like, wait, what's going on now? Is this real? Or are Tyler's tweets accurate that they're actually announcing starters, during the week three of the preseason? So it's refreshing. It's definitely something new, and it just puts a stamp on a new slate. That's what, you know, as John Fay was saying, that really exemplifies, okay, this is a brand new era in Bengals football.
I think the Damian Willis pick and getting the start was really cool for a certain moment in the locker room, actually, because we normally don't get the chance to tell a player that he's not only going to make the roster, but he's going to start. That actually happened on Sunday right after talking to Zach Taylor. We go in there thinking we're going to talk to Damian Willis, because we talked to Damian after preseason game number 3, and I pretty much just went up to him. I said, what were you trying to get out of tonight? Of course, you're trying to make the roster. And he said he was so quiet and tight because he didn't want to mess anything he set up because he wanted to make this roster so badly that he said, I'm just trying to catch footballs out here and trying to avoid getting yelled at by the coaching staff. Tyler, take us through that moment when you went over to Damian.
Yeah, so Damian Willis, he was late walking in the locker room, and so he was just casually walking in, and all the reporters were kind of standing around in the middle, and then I come up to him, and I basically ask him, so how does it feel that you're going to be starting week one in Seattle? And then obviously all the other reporters started rushing over because it was just big news that just dropped by Zach Taylor. And then he looked at me and was like, wait, that's news to me. And I was like, wait, you didn't know? He was like, you know, I went through walkthroughs with the first team last week, and we just conducted walkthroughs this morning, and I was with the ones, but I had no idea I was starting. You basically broke the news to me. And then we, like, both laughed, and everybody pretty much laughed. All the other reporters laughed in the locker room. So I guess I was the newsbreaker for Damian Willis that he is starting week one in Seattle. And like I said, he's earned it with all his play. I mean, his 33-yard catch last week against the Giants, I pretty much knew that sealed the deal for him to make this roster as an undrafted free agent. But to elevate to even further to be a starter, that's just a testament to how he's performed thus far in his early career. And the sky's the limit for him. I mean, hats off to him for making this team as an undrafted free agent, because we all know, we've seen undrafted free agents. They're pretty much practice squad guys or guys that are playing in this fourth preseason game that you never hear from again. But to go from an undrafted free agent to starting week one in the regular season, that's huge. And I know, you know, AJ Green's out and he's taking AJ Green's place, and when AJ Green comes back, he won't be in that starting lineup anymore. But just to make that team in such a quick amount of time, that's impressive.
Right now, preseason game number 4 is something where players are at least trying to make that back half of the 53-man roster practice squad or making tape for another team. John, I'm going to go to you right now. Have you been impressed with the quarterback play from the Bengals right now?
Yeah, I think everyone in OTAs and early in camp thought, Ryan Finley, what's with this guy? And all of a sudden, something clicked on him. Everybody thought Jeff Driskel was going to be the backup. Jeff Driskel's not even playing quarterback. I mean, not getting any reps anymore. It was astonishing because the other guy that's going to play a lot tomorrow, Jake Delgala, is a very impressive guy. Got a, you know, he's 6'7", got a big arm. I think he's a guy that the Bengals would like to hold on to. It's very hard to carry 3 quarterbacks, but I think he makes a practice squad at least. And it'll be interesting to watch him out there. So they've done a good job getting these guys. If you can get a guy for basically no draft choice, nothing, and he makes your team like Willis, that's a good thing, much less starting. The other side of that, Tyler mentioned that he's replacing A.J. Green. Well, when A.J. Green gets back, they're going to have real depth at wide receiver. They're going to have Green, Tyler Boyd, John Ross, who we'll talk about later in the program, and Willis. If he's what they think, you're thinking, man, that's 4 pretty good wideouts.
That's a loaded wide receiver room. And Kareem, I'm going to go back to the offensive line right now. Everybody knows what was kind of happened with Christian Westerman. Thought about retirement, decided to come back, but he did miss a preseason game. He didn't play in preseason game number 3. Probably won't see him in 4, but who knows? We could see that with the offensive line right now. What is going through your mind if you're Christian Westerman's teammates, if he doesn't make the roster, or he does?
Well, I think from a coaching perspective, I mean, you know, this offensive line is still, you know, they need bodies. I know they have, like, certain guys in certain spots already, but if I'm the Bengals organization, I probably want to carry Westerman. You know, he has some experience on the team, on the roster in previous years. And also, you know, if you let him go, if he doesn't return, and you kind of have a little bit of hole there as a backup, as any kind of swing tackle, as anybody you can plug in there as in case of an injury. So, I mean, I was just surprised as much as you guys to hear about, you know, Westbrook doesn't want to play anymore, or possibly, and he comes back, and so we'll have to wait and see. But if I'm from a coaching perspective, I probably want Westerman on the roster.
It's going to be interesting because since his return to the practice field, and I use that term loosely, he has not practiced. He's been on the sideline watching. So that's not a good sign if you want to make this roster. Each and every practice since he's been back, he's watched on the sidelines pretty much 10 feet away from us reporters. So if he's doing as much as me at practice, that's not that good.
Well, you mentioned a coaching perspective, too. The offensive line coach, Jim Turner, is real old school. And I can't see how this sat well with him. And the fact that he didn't practice after coming back. How many
offensive linemen do they have in camp? I mean, I know right now.
Well, they're going to have six offensive linemen play
right
in the next preseason game.
Yeah.
They went into camp, I don't quote me on this, mm-hmm. but they went, I believe, with, I want to say 15 offensive linemen.
Mm-hmm. So, and you want to carry what, 8, 9,
well,
10?
Well, 7 offensive linemen mm-hmm. Make the roster each and every game right. travel. So right. I'm projecting that the Bengals keep 10 offensive linemen. Yeah.
The reason I ask is I'm like, okay, after the first top seven, I mean, who else is there? That's my concern. And you're right, John. I mean, Jim Turner is old school. I listened to him, you know, coaching that unit. And you're right. I don't imagine if you're not practicing, you probably don't want to be on this team.
The other thing is, you know, cut down days Saturday. Some mm-hmm. guys are going to become available, and some already are. I would not be surprised if they add somebody. You just look at what they got. They basically brought two guys back from retirement. So they were searching, and I think they probably still are. Because it just, you know, Michael Jordan's a good story. Trey Hopkins is a good story. But there's still major questions about it. I think they have to look at neither one of those guys played tackle. I think that's the thing right now they're looking at, particularly with Cordy Glenn on concussion protocol. I think there's a good chance he's not going to be able to play in Seattle. Yet. So I think that they'll still be out there on the waiver wire looking.
Yeah, the offensive line is the weakness to this team. There's no doubt about it. And again, it's going to be this year. And it's been a revolving door this offseason and into the preseason, whether it's guys retiring, guys coming back. And as John mentioned, Cordy Glenn's in concussion protocol, and Andre Smith has been starting in his place. So it's real dicey right now. There is some optimism with the offensive line. Like I've been talking to Trey Hopkins. I've been talking to Bobby Harden, John Miller, and, you know, everybody else in the offensive line room. And they do believe that this group is going to be better. And that's not hard to do based on what I saw in film last year.
Really good stuff from Trey Hopkins after preseason game number 3. And he just said it. He said, we're trying to get that chemistry, the confidence between all of us. And it's kind of hard to do that when you do have a little bit of musical chairs going on. We've mentioned that before. I kind of want to go back to Christian Westerman, though, because this is kind of a silly comparison, but it reminds me of my sports playing days. Obviously wasn't in the NFL. But in basketball, when you miss practice, guess what? You weren't starting in that next game. And I know we didn't get to see him on Thursday night, but if you're a player who's been out there, who's been sacrificing your body for all of the preseason games, you've been at training camp all the way, you never once thought, hey, I wasn't going to play. And again, feel how you want. If you don't want to play in the NFL, you don't want to play in the NFL. More power to you if that's your decision. But if you're a player on that team who has been out there, who has been practicing, it's a little frustrating if you do lose your spot. Yes, the offensive line needs all the depth they can get right now.
Well, To that point, and it's funny that you mentioned the NBA, because my immediate thought was Allen Iverson. You're talking about practice. but see, Allen Iverson's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
and so that's why he can say you're talking about practice. But Christian Westerman hasn't done pretty much that much in this league. He has, what, 2 starts in his career? And he's, what, 16 total games? So it's more about what have you done lately and what have you done in your career? What kind of reputation do you have in live games? And he has not built a foundation for himself where he can miss a lot of practice or crucial practices when coaches are evaluating players to make the team. So when you miss that amount of time in practice, no matter how long it is, and you're a bubble guy already, and you're in a four-way battle for that left guard spot, and quite frankly, you're on the third or fourth ranked guy on that left guard spot, it's not going to play in your favor to the end. So, you know, obviously I don't wish that anybody loses their job or anybody's out of a job, but it's, like I said, it's not a good sign when you leave the team and then you come back and you're not practicing and you're already considered by many people a backup anyways.
I want to actually go to the defensive side right now when it comes to linebackers, because I feel like that is a big bubble room right now. Of course, you lose Vontez Burfict because you decide to in the offseason. You move on from him. Malik Jefferson was a guy last season. The team wanted to get more from him, but we really never saw anything from him in training camp. And then when he finally did get on the field, he was injured, so we lost him for the rest of the season. When you look at the linebacker room right now, who is on the bubble?
You want to go, John? You want me?
You can handle it.
So the linebacker room, I got to say Malik Jefferson. He started off training camp probably that number two linebacker spot in the depth chart. Now he's getting replaced by rookies. Deshaun Davis, he's been replaced by Jermaine Pratt. Obviously, you have Jordan Evans back there. So it's going to be interesting. You know, he was highly touted coming out of, you know, college and everything, but he's pretty much lost his spot in the depth chart to two rookies. So I believe he is firmly on the bubble at that linebacker spot. And that's credit to Jermaine Pratt. The Bengals are really high on Pratt, and he's done a very good job this preseason.
They might get that pick right. Kareem, what was the biggest problem with the linebackers last year?
They can't tackle.
That's important.
I mean, no, seriously, like the middle part of the defense, you know, teams were just slashing them right up the middle, whether they're running the ball or that short kind of intermediate passing game. Vigil was the only one that showed any kind of promise in terms of tackling. And so after, you know, coming out of last season, you had Vigil, and that's about it. And then with Preston Brown, you know, he's a good, strong base linebacker. So who are you going to bring in to tackle and to cover? Jermaine Pratt has shown that in training camp that he can tackle and then he can cover. And, you know, it's a shame to, from what I hear about, you know, Malik Jefferson, because he was, you know, I think he came out of Texas last year. And so, you know, who else after those four that I mentioned? What, we got to talk about Hardy Nickerson?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
Bad one, you had to put him out there.
Hardy Nickerson's on the bubble too.
Yeah.
Although I do believe he has a slight edge over Malik Jefferson. Is going to be close, so I wouldn't be surprised if they flip-flop and Malik Jefferson makes the team and Hardy Nickerson does not. Mm-hmm. I have Jefferson. I'm not making a team, though.
Yeah, I want to get back to Pratt a little bit, because I think the one thing he shows, he played safety in college. He has that kind of speed that the other linebackers don't have. He's a strong guy, and he's been impressive. I think he may be the next guy that they announce is a starter. I think you may see him move up. Because if you look at the defensive depth chart on Pro Football Focus, it's kind of like the offense of where there's this one weak spot, the linebackers. None of them, two of them rate average, one below average. The defensive line's a strength. The defensive backs are pretty good. So that's another thing they're going to have to figure out something to do. Pratt's a guy that's in camp and has looked impressive, so I think you may have to try him.
I think the defensive secondary is probably the strongest part of this, arguably this team, but definitely the defense.
I will have to give it to the defensive line. Mm-hmm. I mean, your best player is Geno Atkins. He's on the defensive line. Probably your second best player on defense is Carlos Dunlap. He's on the defensive line. And then you have Carl Lawson,
who's fully healthy
from a knee ACL injury. And he's been dominant in the limited opportunities that he's been available for the preseason. So I have to give it to the defensive line as the best. I mean, I think they're the best position group on this entire football team.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, going to your point, to the secondary, that they have the ability and the guys to be, again, above average NFL secondary. However, I can't say that they're the best position group on the Bengals.
No, I just think with William Jackson, Jesse Bates, and I like Sean Williams a lot. I know he gets a little, he's kind of injury prone, but I think that's part of the nature of the position he plays. But I think that defensive secondary has shown last year that it's a really, really good unit, and I think you're going to see them take a big step, particularly Bates, and then, you know, William Jackson's trying to get paid, so he's played really well, so he's going to play, you know, I expect big things from him this year as well.
He's a cornerback who can tackle, which is pretty rare in the NFL.
Yes.
And likes to tackle, so that's a good thing.
And it was important to get that Pratt pick right, because when you look at the linebacker room, people are giving them, you know, the criticism that they deserved in the past, and they were missing the tackles last year. So I agree with that. I want to bounce off that just a little bit when it comes to guys returning in year two on the defensive side. You mentioned it, Kareem. Jesse Bates is a guy. You see the rookie year, and it's something. I mean, they made a decision last year to say goodbye to George Iloka because they saw something in this rookie, and he took the field. Sam Hubbard, another guy. So I think in year two, for those guys, it's going to be strong for them. And this is almost year two for Carl Lawson.
Basically,
yeah.
I mean, the way he's come back from his rehab at the ACLS, it's going to be interesting. But, yeah, defense looking better than they did last year. Honestly, you can only go up from 2018.
Yeah, they ranked 32 in total defense, and there were only 32 teams in the National Football League. So you could only go up. You can't go to 33.
No. But no, I do think they look stronger. But it's hard to adjust. I mean, last season they dealt with a change with defensive coordinator. Head coach took over the calls, and he looked a little better when Marvin Lewis was making the calls, but they were missing bodies. And everybody hates to use injuries as an excuse, but the Bengals were dealing with a lot last year on the IR. We'll get back to the offensive side, because number 11, yes, number 11, not 15, John Ross returning to the field. And I get a lot of questions about that. What's John Ross going to do? What's he bringing to the team? Well, I haven't seen much of him. He's a bust. There are a couple of things about John Ross that I would just like to say right now. John Ross wants to be on the football field more than anyone, more than anyone when it comes to the fans. He tries, he rehabs. Sometimes we don't understand what happens with the hamstring, why he wasn't out there, you know, the off-season problem, what happened between mini camp and training camp, all of that fun stuff. Everybody wants to know, what can John Ross do? He has the speed, he has the talent. I honestly think if he can stay healthy, he has this new coaching staff who will use them differently. But it is a loaded wide receiver room. What have you thought about him return?
Well, he's started off fast his first few practices. He started his first practice on Sunday, and he was taking first team reps. And the portion available to the media, he was catching passes from Andy Dalton. So the Bengals have him at that starting third receiver spot. They're planning to start him at receiver, Boyd and Damian Willis, obviously, in place of A.J. Green. So if he can stay healthy, that is the most important aspect in his Achilles heel, literally almost, about John Ross. He has to be able to stay healthy. And he started off with a hamstring tightness, was what they labeled it during training camp. And he was getting a little bit antsy. I talked to him a few practices about, you know, how's your hamstring feeling? He always says, you know, I'm getting closer. So he's not close anymore. He's on the field. So that's the first step. And now he has to continue to impress these coaches. And he did during OTAs and during minicamp when he was on the field, because as soon as the training staff cleared him, he was on the field with the starters. And Zach Taylor told me that they expect him to have a valuable role on this team. So I take that and believe that he is going to play, and he is going to play a lot. Even though, you know, a lot of fans say, well, he's a bust, or, you know, he's injury prone. Yes, he's injury prone, but I think we're too quick to jump to conclusions on athletes when they are, you know, young in their careers to label them as a bust. He's gone through, obviously, this coaching change, and he's gone through injuries. Just because you have injuries does not mean you're a bust. It means you've been hurt, and it's affected your play. So we know, as an NFL, it's a league where you often get injured, you often get nicks and bruises, and that is going to hurt you each and every game. But when you're on the field, and when he was on the field, he was okay. He has 7 touchdown catches, so that's productive, and he wants to build on that. So I'm a firm believer, let your actions speak for your words, and he says he's ready to have a bounce back season and ready to improve on what he did last year, which was his best season by all accounts. So let's see what he does.
I did take a video of him at practice on Sunday, and he was returning kicks and punts, and I did get back from people, oh, yeah, they're finally using him. His speed's going to be amazing. Alex Erickson did a fine job out there last season, so I don't think that's going to change much.
Yeah, I think John Ross has something to prove. You know, I know he's been hurt, but his rookie year was a bust. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gets in, they run an end around with him, and he fumbles. And Marvin Lewis, it was see you later. I mean, he barely got on the field after that. So I think if he can stay healthy and in this offense with these other wide receivers, they're big guys. They're not burners like him. So I think they can use him in different ways. I think he can be very effective. Zach Taylor was brought in because of his offensive mind, and I'm sure he's licking his chops to get this guy out there and see what he can do. And I don't think he'll be on the field every down, but I think they'll use him in spots. And we haven't seen the deep ball much from him, despite his speed, and I think you'll see that from him more.
I've kind of verbally bashed John Ross a lot over the last little bit, so I'm going to stop doing that. Everyone knows where I stand on John Ross. John Fay mentioned it. You got to catch the ball. So mm-hmm. It appeared that he had hands of stone there for a while, so hopefully he can catch the ball. But, you know, I think to John Fay's point, you're not going to see him. He's going to play, but he's not going to be there on the field, you know, every single down. And you want to see him kind of stretch the field. I don't know if Zach Taylor's offense lends itself too much to a lot of deep balls. They're going to need to throw down some deep balls, but it seems from what I've seen in training camp, they're doing a lot of short and intermediate stuff. Now, I don't know the quality of John Ross's route running, but maybe they experiment with him and move him inside a little bit, maybe a little bit of slot for John Ross to kind of get, you know, just kind of like a basketball player seeing the ball go in the basket, kind of get some short passes to John Ross, get him the ball, maybe let him work in space a little bit, in addition to his deep ball threat.
People might hammer me for it. I brought it up in like week two of our podcast. I said, no, don't use him for every down. You sprinkle him in. If he's injury prone, he's almost like a Tyler Eifert in the red zone, but now down the field, his speed will be an advantage with that offense. The wide receiver room is pretty loaded right now, especially when AJ Green comes back. He's not guaranteed a spot until he can prove, hey, I'm back, my speed's here.
And they can kind of use him as a decoy too. They did a little bit of that last year. So, you know, just to kind of, again, try to get him back in the swing of things, get his confidence up, put him on the field, let him run around, get some catches, you know, short catches, and then use him as a decoy, and then let him progress from there. And I think, you know, to John Fay's point, you know, Zach Taylor, they brought him in for his offensive mind, and maybe they can, you know, get the best out of John Ross.
Yeah, what he was drafted for, obviously, that vertical speed. He ran an NFL record at the combine. That's why he was drafted so high. And the Bengals need that at wide receiver. They need a deep threat. They need somebody to be able to take the top off of the defense. The only problem is, can he stay healthy? And he has to be consistent. As y'all said, you know, he has some drops in his rookie year, the fumbling problem. So this is a new coaching staff. It's obviously been a fresh slate, because as soon as he was cleared for practice, he's been on the field starting.
I'm going to stay with the loaded rooms right now. The ground game, Ronnie Anderson pretty much securing his spot. Trevion Williams more than likely going to make the 53-man roster. You already have Gio out there. Joe Mixon, everybody knows what they're going to get with him. What are you looking at in that room right now?
I think Joe Mixon is destined for another big year. We know he led the AFC in rushing last year, but he came to training camp very in shape and looked more built. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. The coaching staff has kind of been cautious with him during practices and in the preseason. He hasn't played that much. But that run that he had, ironically, did not count against the Redskins when he stiff-armed Josh Norman. That was, to me, a sign of what's to come and what Joe Mixon has been looking like when he has gotten reps during practice. So I'm expecting big things out of him.
Gio Bernard is someone who was getting compared the other night with Rodney Anderson. I'm here to say Gio is going to be on the 53-man roster. I'll go ahead and guarantee that for Saturday. For some people questioning that move and what the room looks like right now, I think you keep all of those bodies and you're going to have depth there. Somebody who can catch passes, run it on the ground. We'll see that with Joe Mixon, but Gio is still a major asset to this team.
Yeah, he gives you a different look than Mixon. He's a really good receiver. He harkened back I'm going way back here to James Brooks. I don't think he's as good as James Brooks, but James Brooks was a smaller guy, very good receiver. But I agree with Tyler. Mixon's going to get the bulk of the carries, and I think there's going to be games where they count on him to carry the load. But again, it goes back to the offensive line. Can they run block well enough to get him some holes? Because no one in the NFL can get yards on their own completely. So, but he does look good. I'm a little surprised they haven't played him they're not going to play him Thursday, I'm sure. But I'm surprised they didn't play him a little bit more just to get some
get the juice flowing a little bit.
Football shape or whatever.
I can't confirm this, but Zach Taylor saw what happened to A.J. Green the very first day of training camp. And he's like, okay, well, I'm without arguably my best all-around player in the football team and my best player in offense. Now, I can't afford to lose my top running back. Then I'm really going to start this season behind the eight ball.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We're going to get to some social questions right now. I throw it out on ENQ Bengals on Instagram or ENQ Sports on Twitter each week. We're going to get to them. And several. Nobody's forgetting about A.J. Green right now. He's injured. Did see him in the locker room the other day. Everybody, if you're wondering, his ping pong game is going pretty well. He was scooting around on his scooter. Good spirits from A.J. Green. No injury update at the moment. Again, they're still looking at that week three, maybe week four return. Monday Night Football. We'll see for A.J. Green. But everybody asked me, when's A.J. Green going to be back for this team? And I'm going to add this bonus question to it. Extension talks, they're going to be on hold, right?
Yeah, well, before A.J. Green got hurt, I talked to him and I talked to, some other people within the organization, and they were in the midst of, discussing his next contract extension. I don't know. I'm not abreast of the situation as it stands currently. I know he wants to stay in Cincinnati. I know he wants to be a Bengal for life. How his injury affected the situation, that remains to be seen. I know the coaching staff and the owners, they want A.J. Green to stay on this team. And like I said, the feeling is mutual. When A.J. Green is healthy, he's shown that he's a top-flight receiver in the NFL. You see all these NFL top 100 rankings. He's ranked on every single one of them, despite him being injured last year. So A.J. Green, when he comes back in the field, the little portion I did see of him before he got
30
hurt.
Seconds.
Yeah, he did look good. So hopefully he gets back healthy. He's in good spirits, as you mentioned. He's rolling around on a medical scooter with a walking boot on, but he's in good spirits. And again, I have week four circled, that Monday night game in Pittsburgh. However, I would not be surprised if he played in week three against the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo.
Kareem, you've seen this guy come back from rehab and injuries. I mean, we're not going to even be surprised when we see him take the field again in 2019.
No, I think AJ probably be ready before that Monday night football game at the Steelers week four. I think that's the probably play him week four. And I think, historically, when you look at contract extensions, even with the Bengals blue chip players, they typically don't like to do contract extensions during the season. They wrap those things up during training camp or before the start of the season. Now, A.J. Green, if you're going to make an exception to a rule, I think that's when you kind of cash that in. A.J. Green's that kind of special player. And then we've seen him, you're right, you've seen him come back from injury quite quickly before. So I think he'll probably be ready, like I said, before week four, but probably you can comfortably slot him in week four at the Steelers.
The next question, Billy Price, it's actually something I was getting on Twitter right after Zach Taylor mentioned at this press conference on Sunday that he was going to lose his starting job to Trey Hopkins in week one at least. Everybody wants to know, are we going to see Billy somewhere else on the line?
He has gotten reps at guard. However, I do believe that he wants to be a center. That's the position he was drafted for. That's the position that he likes best. He won't say it, but I believe that's the position that, he's most comfortable at. However, he does want to be on the field. And as a competitor, you're a first-round pick, and to lose your starting spot, that's tough on any competitor. but he's taking the high road. He has a good attitude about it. He admitted to me and other reporters that, you know, it is tough, but he knows that Trey has performed pretty well this preseason, and Trey's been there each and every day, so he's deserving of that spot week one.
He actually said, I'm paraphrasing it right now, I could mope around about it, or I could just get better at that position. Mm-hmm. And anybody trying to get better at the offensive line and the depth position is a good thing. I'm going to go to the offense here. Damian Willis. Matt wants to know, while AJ Green is down, and again, guys, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not a fantasy football girl. I don't play fantasy football. I can't get into it. I mean, I'm all for side hustles and just getting that extra cash and watching it each week. But I'm not a fantasy football girl. You know, no offense to anybody who plays. He wants to know, is Damian Willis worth picking up while AJ Green is down?
No.
I don't think so. Don't mess with it.
No, I've actually thought about this because I just had a draft, and I got a draft coming up. I've thought about Damian Willis, and I don't think so. I think it's going to be the Tyler Boyd show. I think, you know, we're talking strictly fantasy football right now.
Yeah, fantasy football. Disclaimer.
I think he takes, you know, a lot of targets, a lot of work. And then they mix in in the passing game. But I think it's just going to be the Tyler Boyd show. I don't think you're going to get much from Damian Willis from a fantasy perspective.
Fantasy guru, Kareem.
John, do you play?
I'm not a fantasy boy. Not at least football fantasy.
No, I'm all about it. And people can play. I'm all about it. I couldn't come up with a cool name. I just didn't want to do it. So
fantasy guru, Kareem. We'll go with Kareem. I 100% agree with Kareem. It's Tyler Boyd is going to get a lot of footballs early and often. Andy Dalton is comfortable with him, and he's their number one target while AJ Green's out.
Keep those questions coming. Again, we'll get to them every week over on the podcast, ENQ Bengals on Instagram or ENQ Sports on Twitter. Around the NFL, this is the time everyone's picking their division winner, Super Bowl champ. You know, it's prediction time. So, SI released theirs today. Andy Benoit, he said the Bengals are going to finish dead last with 4 wins. And guess who? Who's going to win that division?
Oh, the Cleveland Browns.
Cleveland Browns. He has the Cleveland Browns winning the division and the Pittsburgh Steelers with 10 wins getting in as a wild card for the playoffs.
So wait, how many wins did the Cleveland Browns have? 11?
He has 11. They have 11 wins.
11
riding
wins?
Riding that train, I'm telling you.
Blasphemy.
They remind me of the 2010 Bengals, but a lot of talent. So we'll see there when the AFC North comes. Do you guys agree that the Bengals will only have 4 wins?
Well, I guess I'll go first and put myself out on a limb here. I have said it before. I'll say it again. My mind has not changed. The Bengals, I have them down at 6-10. Looking at their roster top to bottom, it's tough to say it if you're being unbiased and you're being real about it, which I try to be real every single time. It's tough to say that they have a better roster top to bottom than the Pittsburgh Steelers, than the Baltimore Ravens, than the Cleveland Browns. I don't think they're that far away from those three teams, but they're going to have their hands full in this division. And I do have them finishing last in the division, but it's going to be more competitive than people think it is. And 4 wins, I believe there was an article, what, a month ago that had them at 3 wins. Yeah. So that should light a fire under each and every one of those players, because 3 wins, 4 wins, that's disrespectful. That pretty much says you're trash. You're trash as a football team.
I don't think they're trash. I don't think they're three win team or a 4 win thing. I think they're about a 7 win team. I think they're gonna beat the Ravens at least once. So I don't know. They're gonna finish last, I think, but 6 or 7 wins. I don't think 3 or 4 is actually anywhere in the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah, and I could see 7 wins being at the bottom of the division. That's how strong it is.
Exactly.
I think Vegas has them at 6 wins, and I listen to Vegas a lot more than I listen to football writers on predictions. So I think the NFL, I don't play fantasy football, but I play a King of the Hill where you got to pick a winner each week. Mm-hmm. No spread, no anything. There's 210 people in it usually. In the first 2 weeks, a lot of times half the people go out because you just never know with the NFL. yeah, on paper, they don't look very good, but stranger things have happened. I think that the thing you can't measure is what a difference Zach Taylor will make. I don't know if it'll be a great if it'll be a good thing, but I think they needed a change. They've made that change, so we'll see what happens with that. But the talent level, yeah, they're a 5 or 6 win team according to talent level, but again, weird things happen in the NFL.
Had to do a double check on Saturday night when I'm looking at Twitter and I see Adam Schefter tweet, Andrew Luck is going to announce his retirement either after the game or the next day. Shocking news around the league. I mean, shocking because he's on the sideline for the preseason game. I can't imagine being in the middle of the broadcast and all of a sudden you get that tweet and you see that. Of course, the Colts didn't confirm it, but Andrew Luck talked about it afterwards. My opinion right now, not everyone's and nobody has to agree with it. Again, when people have a profession, I don't care if it's the NFL or anything you do, you can walk away whenever you want if you feel like you no longer have the love for it. Andrew Luck has plenty of money in the bank. He's an intelligent guy. Everybody knows he went to Stanford, a great NFL quarterback, one of the best in the league last year, and he proved that. And it's definitely a loss for the Colts team. But I had no problem with the guy saying, I just don't mentally – like, I don't want to go through this again. I've had to rehab. I've had to come back from injuries. I'm just kind of over this, and I'm ready to retire with still plenty of time left in his life at 29. Again, if anybody could retire at 29 and have all the money in the bank, you'd do it in a heartbeat and you wouldn't look back.
Yeah, I don't think the casual fan realizes what these players go through on a daily basis, especially if you're injured. The rehab process is exhausting, it's grueling, it's tedious. It's boring. There are so many aspects that go on each and every day when you're injured. And quite frankly, every single football player is injured by like week 2.
Yeah.
There is an injury whether it's just a knick-knack injury or a major injury that keeps you out for a while. So, yeah, he just lost the passion and the love for the game, and injuries have played a part in that. And it takes courage. It takes a lot of wisdom beyond your years to just say, you know what, I know this is going to shock the world. I'm still in the prime of my career, but I'm comfortable within my own skin, and I'm comfortable with my decision to walk away from the game. And I don't care what X, Y, and Z, the guy living in his mom's basement or the guy who's never played football or sports in his life has to say. Because if you're not on the field, if you've never been an athlete on a high level, you do not know what these players have to do each and every week. And I give props to Andrew Luck for saying, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore, and I'm comfortable with walking away from the game at this point in my career.
He was getting a little bit of criticism because of when it happened, maybe not making this decision earlier, some news kind of breaking out that he decided he wanted to do this weeks ago. The Colts knew about it. We won't really ever know that unless it comes out. Kareem, if you're his teammates, what's going through your mind?
Well, I'm just thinking about, you know, when you're 29 years old as a professional athlete, how long you've been playing this sport? You know, I think it's important for fans to keep in mind that you've been playing when you're pushing 30, you've been playing the sport for 20 years, you know, and you've been getting all those hits and all those, you know, injuries. And then, you know, it's not just like me. Like, I've been an Enquirer photographer for 5 years. Okay, it's time to hang it up, you know.
Those big checks.
Right. You know what I'm saying? If you're one of his teammates or a fan, one of the things that fans always kind of complain about is like, oh, this player doesn't care. Remember with Jay Cutler? Oh, this guy doesn't care. You know, why is he even playing? He doesn't care. So what is it that you want? Do you want an Andrew Luck, a quarterback, the leader of your football team, to be 50% in, 50% out? Or do you want a player that maybe is not necessarily as good as Andrew Luck, but is 100% dedicated to playing football and contributing to the team? And I think that's the same thing with his teammates. His teammates probably can identify with his struggle better than anybody. And you know, he's like, yeah, I want my quarterback to be 100% all in. So if he wants to retire, okay, sure, you know, retire. But maybe the only thing I think that his teammates and the fans kind of can have a legitimate grievance about is just the timing. And in life, timing is hard to master. Timing is everything in life to a certain extent. And, you know, right there at the end of the preseason, right before the regular season starts, you retire. I can understand the frustration, but you have to remember as a fan that, you know, they've been playing this game when you're, by the time you're 30, for 15 or 20 years, and all those hits and all those injuries that you have to come back from. You know, it's hard to say, to point at a guy and say, you can't do this with your life, or you need to be playing out there when you don't, when your heart's not in it. So, I mean, if it were me with his teammates or the fans, just let the man make his decision and walk away and move on.
Rob Gronkowski actually said, and of course he retired in the offseason, he said, after the Super Bowl, I was in my bed crying from the pain. The night he won the Super Bowl, he was in pain from the game that he loves too. But he said the love just, they went away. And he totally understood where Andrew Luck was coming from. Again, Gronk could go out there and still play tight end right now. And he may come back. He didn't rule it out. But, John, I know you had a chance to talk to Andy Dalton about it.
Yeah, Andy's in a unique position where he's been on the IL twice, but it was for a thumb. You know, he hasn't gone through that. But I think he understood that, and what Andrew Luck has gone through. And I think what Tyler mentioned, the rehab, covering baseball for years, Zach Cozart totally blew out his knee. Totally, you know, all three ligaments. And I did a long story on him about that rehab where he couldn't walk up steps for 6 weeks. And he had a toddler and, you know, his wife. And it just, the process, the painfulness of it. So I think that's just a hard thing to deal with. And it's his decision. I think I can agree with the fans' frustration. I cannot agree with them booing. You don't boo that guy. You salute him and you say, hey, it was a tough decision for the team for this year, but he played his heart out for us for however many years.
Speaking of booing,
yeah, I talked to a few players this week, and they had some very strong words about fans booing him, just based on because what Andrew Luck has done for that entire organization. And Dre Kirkpatrick probably had the most angry when I spoke to him and had the harshest feelings about the fans. And he basically said, you know, they disgusted me. This is a direct quote now. When I talked to Dre Kirkpatrick, he said, Colts fans, they disgusted me. They feel like we are robots and animals or encaged people that have to abide by all their rules. They were very disrespectful. Andrew Luck has done so much for that organization. So, I mean, he didn't mince his words at all.
Yeah, he was honest.
I mean, I 100% agree with him. You can't boo a guy, especially if you have never been in his position.
No.
And the players, his peers in the NFL, were pretty much all in unison, saying, you know, yeah, it's a tough way to go out. I was surprised by it. But then, you know, when I see his explanation and see what he's gone through, it's hurt, rehab, and a cycle. Hurt again, rehab, comeback, hurt. It's a continuous cycle like that. When you go through that and when you lose your passion, when he explained all of that so eloquently on Saturday evening, it was like, okay, well, I got to agree with him. Yeah. And that's his decision. At the end of the day, that's his decision.
He was in tears, actually, in that post-game press conference. It looked like somebody who, you know, was ready to walk away, ready to turn his page. And Andrew Luck will be just fine post-NFL. And Carlos Dunlap had a few words, too.
Yeah, Carlos Dunlap had a lot of words when I spoke to him about Andrew Luck. And we can play this sound now.
It's a guy who poured all his hard work and dedication into an organization and turned it around after, you know, the Manning stuff. He came in, filled some big shoes, and gave them very promising hopes. And, you know, they built a very strong team around it that, you know, and they still have a very strong quarterback. You know, Brissett's a very strong quarterback. But, obviously, you would prefer Luck. But at the end of the day, Luck had he was in a place that wasn't mentally smart for him to go out there and play quarterback for that organization. So he could have went out there and faked it. Would y'all rather him faked it?
Yeah.
Like, what would you rather? You got to respect his decision.
All right, that's Around the NFL. We'll get to that every week on the BBP. And again, preseason game number 4 coming up, wrapping up at Paul Brown Stadium on Thursday night. versus Andrew Luck's former team, the Indianapolis Colts. We'll have all that up on Cincinnati.com. But what is up there right now, guys?
So I have a story on the message Zach Taylor sent to the entire Bengals team when he announced three new starters, Damian Willis, Michael Jordan, Trey Hopkins. That was a loud and clear message sent by Zach Taylor, so check that out. I have another story about John Ross, how he's working his way back and how he's happy to finally be on the field again after having being hampered by that hamstring injury. So those are my two stories, and I know John has a few stories online as well.
Nothing off the top of my head. I'm working on a story on Sam Hubbard, and then we'll have the big section coming up, the kickoff section to begin the season. I'm going to write a story about Andy Dalton for that. There'll be lots of stuff in that.
I thought you were going to say the big fourth preseason game.
Yeah,
the riveting fourth preseason
recap
game.
And all that fun stuff. Plenty of stuff coming up on Cincinnati.com. Again, in about a week, they're going to be taking off to Seattle. Week one on the road for the Bengals, from the 53-man to what's ahead for regular season from predictions. Make sure you're staying with Cincinnati.com, following along on Twitter, E&Q Sports, also E&Q Bengals over on the Instagram. Huge thanks to producer and our guy over here, Kareem El-Ghazar.
Recently married.
That's right, man.
Taking a little bit of a break, and he is back, and we're going to see a lot of him again. Make sure you check out the albums post-game, pre-game. They're going to have plenty up there from preseason game number 4. Tyler Dragon, also John Fay. Follow us along on Twitter. Thanks for joining us on the BBP. We'll be back next week.
See ya.